Mina, you, if I understand correctly, you were born in Hong Kong, raised in Vancouver. What made you want to do this film?
Well, when Sel and Jacob met me 4 years ago at the Whistler Film Festival, he sat me down. He says, "I think I have a project we could work on." And he told me that there were, in 1969 in Montreal, six black students charged a white professor with racism, and that they were all under surveillance. And my immediate response was personal. The fact that it's hard in today's world to discuss racism, even with close friends, without people's getting their backs up or getting defensive. And that these students actually stood up and said, "Hang on, this is racism. We're going to charge it, we're going to write it on a piece of paper, and we're going to protest." It seemed really heroic to me. It seemed like and a bit of an injustice that I'd never heard of these heroes before. So immediately I was like, "I have to meet these people. I have to get to know them. I want to talk to them." So there was that personal connection of being a immigrant from another country. And then as a filmmaker, the fact that they were under surveillance really gave me the central metaphor for the visuals in the film, which is how we see each other. Racism is about how we see each other and why we judge. And if you're under surveillance, that is the ultimate manifestation of power over another. And also, it was 1969, Montreal, which I love Montreal. I've left my heart in Montreal at times in my life. And the architecture here of Expo, I could see the film as this poetic combination of what was then and what is now.
Mr. Jake, you are from the Caribbean yourself.
Yes, I am.
Did you know any of the protesters?
I did. I actually, when I left Trinidad in 1968 to come to Canada and to go to the University of Alberta. But prior to making that decision, I had considered coming to St. George because just about anybody that I knew, they're talking about this university, which was very welcoming to students, in this case, Trinidad in particular, and generally students from the Caribbean. So coincidentally, there were two students from my very village who went to St. George, and one was involved. Sadly, he passed away. But over the years, this was 68. I remember, think about 1988. I went back home on a vacation, and I ran into him, and he was describing in all its gory detail, how the police were violent towards the students. I couldn't grasp exactly what he was talking about, but all of the imagery that I'd collected over the years, sort of embedded in my mind, and going as far back as 1968, when I actually heard about the incident, the manner in which I heard about the incident is through a professor who I'd become friendly with, and he would always try to get me involved because he knew I was from Trinidad. And sometime in February, when the incident happened, this morning I showed up, and he said, "Selwyn, I hope we are still friends." And those lines remained embedded in my memory because I had no idea what he was referring to until I went home and I saw the television news and I saw that students from the Caribbean were involved. And I was shocked, I was surprised, and I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that students were pushed to that limit where they would behave like that. And it just wasn't the way we were raised. So that's how I encountered the event.
What was your experience like when you came to Canada in 1968? What was it like to be a black student in Canada?
Well, I mean, you're very, very self-conscious, People had no idea what language they spoke in the Caribbean, why I was carrying a Welsh name, Selwyn is a Welsh name, so it ties into slavery. Plantation owners, colonized people and that, So you found yourself explaining and you really wanted to fit in. It was cold, So you had to find ways of sort of adjusting and assimilating. And I live in what we call it a West Indian house. and we had students from Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, Grenada, St. Vincent, and Guyana. We lived in this one house. So we kept a little bit of our Caribbean heritage in the thing. Meanwhile, we tried to do outreach, you know. So we'd have West Indian parties, and we'd invite Canadians and share our music with them. So you felt as though you had to be continually trying to be proactive in terms of how you integrated within the society. But nonetheless, you know, there were things that, you know, racism existed. I mean, somebody in the film talked about trying to rent a house or rent a place. And that's one of the reasons we had what was called a West Indian house. We rented a house from the university, and then about eight of us lived in this house together. It was very, very difficult to get apartments to rent.
So when did you decide that you absolutely had to make a film about the riot?
1969, when the incident happened. I grew up in an era where I couldn't see representation of people from the Caribbean or people who were black on the screens. So I came to Canada with a dream of ultimately becoming a filmmaker. And when this incident broke and I saw the imagery, I felt here was a story. Wow, this could be a film. It felt cinematic, and I knew it was going to be dramatic in terms of people had to go to jail, they were deported, racism, you know, all of the elements. So it wasn't something that I felt I had to make the next week or the next month, but at some point in my career, I knew I had to tell the story. And over those years, I was getting bits and pieces put together. You know, were the students really that stupid? They were going to destroy the computer center, set it on fire, and then they were locked in. And then I started meeting a whole bunch of different people, and the story started going off in various tangents. And that's when I felt that, you know, this is a huge story. And, of course, I got to know Mina's work, and I know stylistically I didn't just want to make an ordinary film about it, because this was no ordinary story.
So, Mina, how do you go about telling such a complex and, in a way, still a very contemporary story? I mean, it happened 47 years ago, but it's still an issue that resonates with us, whether we like it or not, in Canada and especially in the United States.
It was, in some ways, very simple, which was I followed the stories of the six original complainants, and I opened my heart to listen, to bear witness. And in some ways, the film, the making, I kind of call it collective theater, the film, in a way, because each participant was involved in everything. When they're walking through the snow in Île Sainte-Hélène with the suitcase that I've given them, and I've got a surveillance camera on them as they're doing it, that wasn't an accident. They were very much participants in creating the film, and they have ownership of some of that imagery. They wanted to make beautiful, poetic images of how isolated they felt in the snow with their brown skin, and how different they were. You know, it wasn't that hard in terms of finding the metaphors, because all you have to do is show some of that archival footage, listen to their stories, and you cannot help but think about today. You can't help but think about Black Lives Matter or the Syrian migrants, because those images have not changed. I as a filmmaker don't have to club the audience over the head. They make that connection themselves.
You say a lot, you know, these images are still with us.
Mm-hmm.
We like to think that Canada has changed in this 47 years.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Has it changed?
Well, I'm hopeful because of the conversations I've heard at the screenings of the film, that people are willing to look at their flaws. And I'm not talking about black, white people. I'm talking about everybody, not just one particular group. For me, the film is a very humanist, spiritual film. We are all connected. We've all felt fear. The question is, how do we get over our fears to be more open to each other? And the film really brings that theme to light, I think. The fact that Selwyn and I made the film with the complete support of the National Film Board, with the support of Concordia, that gives me a lot of hope that people, that we're in a slightly different place. Can we do better? Yes, we can do better. Fear has become the currency of power now. You know, that we're being controlled by the powers that be, with all the media about all the terrible things that could happen if we actually were inclusive. Well, we as individuals, each person can do something about that. They can look at another person in the eye and see their humanity and not just what can be taken away from them if they shared.
Yeah, I could answer that question. I don't think it's a definitive expression, Canada has changed. But how I'd describe it is Canada has evolved and has continued and is continuing to evolve. And part of the reason it is changing is that I think the immigrants and the diversity that they bring, inevitably they will change the status quo. And I'll just give you an example through my life as a filmmaker. I graduated from film school in 1975. I could not get a job in filmmaking back in those days. Right? I couldn't go into CBC and ask for an application form. So I worked as a teacher. I continued making films on my holidays. I wanted to work for CBC. I wanted to work for the National Film Board. I wanted to work for all of those institutions. But all of those institutions, even though they were supposed to reflect the diversity of Canada, were employed by the status quo. But gradually, I think people realize that if you really want to get authentic stories, you have to get people from those respective cultures telling those stories. And my path of changing the culture was by the way I made films and the type of stories that I chose to make into films. So I continued working about blacks who settled on the prairies, blacks who were denied certain jobs working on the railways across Canada. And I built up a body of work which got me to the point where I felt I can tell this story. So the reason it took me like 4 decades to tell this story is that I recognized back then that to tell the story properly, you have to have the expertise, you have to have the resources, both human and financial, and you have to find a way to make the story resonate with the audience of today. Just some of the very things. So when I went to MENA, these were some of the things we spoke about. We won this film. It's 47 years old, but we want it to resonate with today's audiences. And those are some of the things that we brought to this film.
Yeah, I think that for me personally, I was really concerned that a story that took place that long ago would be relegated as a historical event that happened to a small group of marginalized people. And that if we made it... if we didn't bring it up to date, if we didn't make it an epic Shakespearean story, which is one of we wanted to have that Shakespearean breadth of history and time and present, that it was all intermingled, or else it's really easy to dismiss and just go, oh yeah, that happened a long time ago. It wouldn't happen again. But because of the way we made the film, because of the resources we were given this time around, I think we really you get a sense of what they felt like, and it really resonates with how you feel now.
What was the most difficult thing about making this film?
For me, it's such a sad story that it took a toll emotionally to make the film, to be there for the students that 46 years later, they're telling me their stories, and it's as if they were there yesterday. I'm the only person sitting in the interview space with them. There's no way that I can't feel something. And then on top of it, now that we screen the film, after every screening I've been to, there is somebody crying, and that I'm holding at the end of the movie, so a stranger. So to me, that those wounds are very deep, and they still exist, and that's something that... maybe I wasn't so aware of until this film was made. It's almost like it seemed like it opened up some wound that needed to be addressed in our society.
What do we do to address those wounds?
That's a tough question. I'm getting goosebumps right now because, you know, for me, the film is more than just sort of recreating the story. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of personal reflection analysis, because what people don't realize is that when I lived in Alberta for those years, the information that I got from the media, I was actually thinking along the lines of Canadian mainstream people. And I saw these people as troublesome, you know, troublemakers who came up from a different culture, and instead of, you know, just being in the boat and, you know, going the distance, they decided to rock the boat. And it took me a long time to realize there's another side to that story. So I feel honored and privileged, you know, to be in the film and for them to have the trust in us. We have, for example, we have Senator Ann Coles, who did not want to be in the film because she had been so vilified in the media, right? And she went to jail for 4 months, courage of her conviction. And so she was, you know, seriously traumatized. And we tried to get her to go back to Sir George Williams, the campus, so that we can take a picture of her. She would not go. And she did not go. But I appreciated that, you know. And then when we showed it in the premiere in Toronto, somebody asked the question, are there people who refuse to participate in the film? I said, yes. There are two people who refused to participate in the film. But ultimately, they had a change of heart. One of those people was Senator Ann Coles. Mm-hmm. And I said, I will pass the microphone on to her. And what she said is one of the proudest moments for me. She said, I trusted the National Film Board, and I trusted Mina and Selwyn with that story. Mm-hmm. And as Mina said, I think the people were willing to put themselves out on the line because they felt the story had to be told. And they were getting an opportunity to tell their story, but nobody editorializing on it. They were telling their story, whereas before, the radio station would just send their reporters and their journalists, and they would do their perspective of what happened. Another simple example. I was watching the film for, so and you start picking up on details, right? And you see a newspaper headline after the riot and the fire. No, before it, when it got to the riot. Unyielding students at Sir George Williams University. Unyielding students. That's how they referred to the students who had occupied the computer center. They were not unyielding. It was the administration that was unyielding. You know, mm-hmm. But from the perspective of the reporter, they're right, you know, so they're just dismissing the student's attitude.
I think you were asking about how do we heal. I think the first step is to acknowledge, and healing takes time. It takes 46 years, and we will continue to heal. But the fact that we are the audiences, that Canada's ready for this film, is a very positive step. People want to, I mean, most of our audiences aren't black. They're all types coming, young and old. And so it feels like a real, I mean, we're talking today, it's Martin Luther King's birthday. It feels like what he did, what these students did for civil rights, for human rights, that has a legacy, and we're seeing the evolution of it continuing. When are we ever going to be there? I think because we're humans and we all have different perspectives, it's always going to be challenging. But if we acknowledge it's going to be challenging, and that yet we still can differ and still be compassionate, that I think that's a step towards healing.
Another step might be whenever this event was mentioned, it was mentioned in a context of shame. Mm-hmm. These students brought shame to their families and embarrassment to the country. And what I'm seeing right now, people are speaking about this film with a sense of pride.
Yeah.
One filmmaker, yes, said, I'm going to tell all my friends, mm-hmm. go see this film. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference from saying, go see the riots of Sir George Williams University back in the 70s or the 80s, to now in 2016, you can say, you got to see this film. It's the same story, but it's an uplifting story in all of its negativity.
And this is a story that Canadians across the country will be able to see?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We opened theatrically in Montreal first, but it will be playing every city.
Are there any plans to bring it to international?
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't shown it in Trinidad. Half of the subjects are from Trinidad, mm-hmm. and I keep getting emails, Selwyn, when? Yeah. Question mark, you know.
It will happen this year.
It will happen this mm-hmm. year, definitely.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.